This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. If you're a fan of MPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today I have with me
Richard Milden.
And I am Stuart Burks. Okay, now Richard, your family actually came to this part of the world a long time ago. You've settled in Kairanga in
1894. Okay. Yes, they had come to New Zealand on the New Zealand shipping company Tongariro. And came to Wellington in October of 1894, took accommodation in a place in Plymouth Steps, apparently, and then while the family was staying there, my great-grandfather George, he came northwards. He was looking for a place. He was wanting a farm, and so he looked around to see if he could find any country that suited him. Yeah. And he picked on a place at Kairanga, which was a settlement area that had been broken in 1881. And the farm that he bought had two previous owners before he took it over.
That was a sheep farm, dairy farm?
At that stage, they were probably farming sheep. Yeah. What the previous farmers had, I wouldn't know, but I would guess sheep would be appropriate for the country that they were in.
Yeah. Do you know what brought them out here?
George, my great-grandfather, apparently had a heart condition, and his doctor advised him to go to a place with a better climate than Somerset, where he had been living at the time. He looked at the possibility of South Africa and Australia, but New Zealand was the place that he finally chose. He came with some very good references to various landowners around New Zealand, most particularly in the South Island. But when he got here, he decided to do things on his own and didn't refer to any of the people he had been introduced to at all.
Okay, yeah. So his heart condition didn't actually inhibit his ability to... Was it very similar sort of farming here to Somerset, apart from...
No, well, he wasn't a farmer in Somerset. He was a school teacher in Somerset. Okay. He had his own private school for boys of all ages and had started teaching, or he had bought the lease on a school in the village of Alcombe, which was a few miles out of Minehead. Yeah. The village is now part of Minehead City, but in those days it was separate. And he bought the lease on the school from the local landowner, which was the Luttrell family.
Yeah.
And that was in 1874.
Uh-huh.
And he taught there. He was married a fortnight after he took the lease on the school.
Yeah.
And so he took over the school with his wife and no family at that stage and remained there until 1894.
So it's actually quite a big adventure for them, move way far away from the family and so on, and different sort of employment and lifestyle.
Yes, it was a complete change for him. He had always, although he was a teacher at the boys' school, he did have rural interests, and one of the several of the subjects that he introduced at the school were rural type interests. He took the boys surveying, so he knew all about the layout and how to lay out countryside, and to measure land as well, which was one of his particular skills. He took the boys down to the beach at Minehead, where they used to go ocean swimming. So the education that the boys got was apparently quite a broad education compared to the strictly academic side of things.
Yeah, okay. So he'd been married for several years, and he brought the whole family out.
Yes, after he was married for 20 years after when they came to New Zealand. By that stage, they had the eldest girl was, I'm just trying to remember her name. Second daughter was Mary. The eldest boy was Percy. And then there were three younger ones, Francie, Dorothy, and Margie. And there was another one boy that died. He was called Richard, but he died at about 18 months. So they came out with the Alice was the eldest girl, I've just remembered. So they came out with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 children. It was a steamship, not a sailing ship. It was a refrigerated ship, so that on the return journey, it loaded up with sheep carcasses to take back to the UK.
So there are a few cabins and there was cargo in the hull.
I think they came saloon class, which was the middle range of the class that they could have come out on.
Okay. So you know anything about the attitude of taking the whole family? Right, we're going to go to New Zealand. They were all...
There's nothing at all on record about how everybody felt about it. Yeah. But I know that when they arrived, the eldest daughter, she was taken out to... When they had chosen the piece of land, when George had chosen the piece of land, he went back to Wellington, picked up his family and brought them up to Palmerston North. And they went out to the farm, and the eldest daughter burst into tears because the countryside was just a swamp with swamp-blackened stumps, fire-blackened stumps, and nothing like the countryside in Somerset where they had come from. And
so although the farm was broken in, basically, it was unstumped out
of the bush.
Yeah.
And the stumping actually wasn't finished until 1918, mm-hmm. when my grandfather burnt the last of the stumps that were taken off.
Okay, yeah.
So it was pretty, what would you say, very wet, swampy country.
Okay.
Not well drained.
So they drained it and...
Drainage went on all my life, right through. Yeah. There had been big drains put through by the government when they first opened up the block.
Yeah.
And then drainage was continuous and progressive.
Yeah, okay. So was it good farming land?
Very good farming land. Yes, it was. Okay. Yeah. Very deep topsoil.
Yeah.
It grew things like mad, although as the years passed, the quality for growing in the ground it reduced, and it became good sheep country.
Okay, yeah. So they didn't try sort of rotation type farming to.
The only work that they would have done like that would have been leaving paddocks for hay. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
I can remember wheat being cut off in about 1952 or 53. I don't know of any, and there's no evidence of anything like that being done earlier.
Yeah, okay. So was there a homestead on the farm?
There was a homestead on the place already built, a single-storey, typical colonial layout. And it had a 13-foot stud. It was very high. It would have been very cold and damp because of the general atmosphere of the whole countryside at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Fireplace in every room.
Yeah. And was that's the house that the family moved in and they stayed there, or...?
They moved into the house until Percy got married. He had arrived in New Zealand when he was 16 in 1894. And then Percy got married, and he built the house next door in 1905. And so Percy, with his new wife, shifted to the house next door, leaving Mrs. Milden Senior and four daughters. George had died in 1904, kidney failure.
Okay. Yeah.
And so there was nothing they could do for kidney failure in those days.
Yeah, so he went out because of the heart and then died from the...
Yeah, he lasted 10 years on the farm.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So do you think that the family was settled there? Well, they were happy to stay there long term, weren't they?
Yes, Percy, when he arrived with his father, with his family, he was not a keen farmer at all. It was not something that he fancied doing. But when the responsibility fell on him after his father died, he made a great fist of it, actually, and became a very successful farmer. Mm-hmm. And stayed there with his wife, and eventually when Mrs. Milton Sr. died, Percy and Emily, after alterations had been made to the old house and a top story put on, Percy and Emily moved into the old house.
Now, is that the house that was about a year ago you've moved out of, but it was in the family, right?
That's right, yes. Okay. When Percy got married, and he had two sons, and one of those sons, the youngest of them, Dick, was my father. Mm. Dick, when he got married, built a house further up the road, and he had a family of three, and I was the middle one, older sister Judy and younger sister Alison. Mm. And then when I got married, the old farmhouse became available, and that was in 1977-78.
Okay.
And we moved into it at that stage.
So it's been in the family for in the end for about 125
until we
years,
sold the place in 2021. Yes, we had been there. There had been a family member living in the house for 125 years.
Yeah. Was there much of a community early on then, or
in the sense of Kairanga? It was a changing community by the time we were there. There was a community that contributed their families to the school, and it was essentially a school community that was around.
Yeah.
And then when I started at school, there were a couple of kids that used to come from town, and then gradually through my life, by the time we left Kairanga, more than half of the children going to Kairanga school were from the city. Although Kairanga community had increased in size, the community feeling was a lot less than it had been.
Early on, though, would you be how far was Kairanga from the centre of Palmerston North? Was it
about 8 miles?
Okay, so going back 100 or so years, it was actually quite
Yes, it was.
So when you were growing up, would you go into Palmerston North much?
We did go into town when we were kids. Judy, the eldest, my sister, she went in as a regular into town for ballet lessons and then for piano.
Mm-hmm.
And then Alison, my younger sister, she did ballet, so she went into town on a regular once a week basis. Mm-hmm. Thursday always seemed to be our going to town day. That was the day that Mum did the shopping and bought the groceries and what have you.
Yeah, so that was a big adventure going to the big city, was it?
Well, it happened at least once a week, so the adventure feeling wasn't quite so great. We knew town pretty well. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Mm. But most of your friends would have been.
All our friends were within biking distance of. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Of friends my age. At that time. Yeah.
Okay. So what was life like for you then, growing up on a farm?
Yes, we were. Yes. I think life on a sheep farm for a youngster growing up was easier than life on a dairy farm, because all of the kids at school that I can remember that lived on dairy farms were hauled out of bed 5 o'clock in the morning to go and help with the milking, whereas our normal getting up time was after Dad had brought the milk in from milking the house cow. So, and while we were at school, 8 o'clock was our normal getting up time. So that was, in that sense, it was a pretty cushy life.
That was later than me,
yeah. I know.
Because your school was just across the road or something?
It was biking distance up the road, only half a mile. So it was easy.
Okay. So did you have many jobs to do around the farm?
As a youngster at primary school, no.
Mm-hmm.
No, the farm was pretty much playtime for us. except in the August holidays when we always help with the dagging, with docking and with the lambs.
Oh, yeah.
And that was always one of our August holiday jobs, was to help with the docking. Okay. And at the end of the year, before Christmas, we would they'd be shearing as well.
Right.
But shearing in the early days as a primary school kid was just fun to us. We played on the wool bales, and our friends used to come out from town, and it was just a fun time for us.
Oh yeah. Okay. So did you have, now with a country school, there'd be all the sort of country school type activities, but did you have pet lambs and things?
We had pet lambs. There was an active calf club or agricultural, boys and girls agricultural club, as they called them in those days. And we had always had pet lambs. In fact, the first photograph of me taken at school is on a calf club day.
All right. Okay,
and I'm standing there with a pet lamb, and that would have been taken within weeks or months of my starting school.
Okay. So, and for you, a pet lamb would actually have been a pet rather than one dragged out of the paddock?
There were always ones that came in that had had mothers that had either died
or
if there were triplets and the mother couldn't handle them, Dad would bring one in.
Okay. So you actually had some responsibility caring for them?
We fed them, yes.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Then
responsibility might not have been. We had feeding; it was always fun at the beginning, but then it became a job to do.
So, did you get attached to them, or were they attached to you then?
They always got attached to you because they knew that's where their food come from.
Yeah.
And they were you could pat them and and be friendly with them. Yes, they were not wild in any sense of the word.
Yeah, but then after a certain age, they just went off to the works.
Generally, they did. Yes, there was one that did stick around. One that was Judy's lamb, and that stuck around for years and years and years as a ewe that never went away. But mostly our pet lambs did disappear off to the works with.
Yeah, and what was your feeling about that?
I don't
these
recall.
Things happen.
I have absolutely no recall of that whatsoever.
Okay, so it wasn't overly important.
not for me. No. Okay. Just it was the fact of my sister's lamb that got to be called Kushla. I remember the name was that they gave it.
Yeah.
Kushla she was, or Cushy.
Mm-hmm.
A very odd shaped sheep she was too.
Oh yeah. In what way?
She was very broad in the beam.
Oh, okay. I mean, overfed you.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So were there many other animals on the farm then?
We had sheep and cattle, and two house cows, one for our place, and one where Dad's unmarried brother lived in the old homestead down the road.
Yeah, so no chickens or.
Well, we had chooks. Yes, Dad built a very big chook house out the back, and we had chooks from as early as I can remember.
Yeah, yeah. And were you largely self-sufficient? You also grew vegetables and.
He was very proud of his vegetable garden. It was a big vegetable garden, and not entirely self-sufficient. I know Mum did buy green groceries from town, but. It was always a big garden, and he rotated around it from year to year.
Yeah. And did that transfer over to the children as well? You got involved in those?
Well, it certainly transferred through to Judy, my sister. I'm not a vegetable gardener at all, and never have been.
Yeah.
Not being a great vegetable eater either. So.
Yeah, okay.
There's not much incentive for me to grow them.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and as a farming family then, were you able to get away much? You had holidays as children?
Now, that was an interesting thing, that. Holidays for most farmers were pretty non-existent. But then when Dad got married, it became a difficult job to get him off the farm. We did have a short holiday in Foxton in about 1950.
Was that camping at Foxton Beach?
No. We took there was a batch down there, which is actually still there.
Oh, yeah.
Over the road from what was the skating rink.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had a, we stayed down there That was the first holiday that I can recall in about 1950.
Yeah.
Then in about 1953, we met a couple of Dutch fellows that came to work on the farms locally. That was a time when there was a lot of Dutch people coming into the country.
Yeah.
And a couple of them came and settled on farms and places around us.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to know two of them, and they were the nicest guys you could ever hope to meet. They were really, really mm-hmm. nice young fellows.
Yeah.
And one of them in particular had a bit of a tough time because he lost touch with his father during the war.
Yeah.
And then he made contact again, or his father somehow found him, or he found his father, I can't remember which way around it was, and Peter, who was the Dutchman that was staying with us at the time, spoke to his father on the telephone, and his father was coming to New Zealand, but before he got to New Zealand he died.
Oh.
And so Peter was just absolutely distraught.
Yes.
And I think Mum and Dad probably felt very sorry for him, and so he became almost a member of the family at that time. And
yeah.
And in 1953-54, Christmas holidays, we did a camping tour around the North Island and took Peter with us as a member of the family in our new Morris Oxford.
Oh, right.
Yes, which was a change from the old standard eight that we used to have.
Yeah, well, we went through the same. So we had, a standard eight, and later, well, we had Hillman Meeks and then Morris Oxford.
Oh, Morris Oxford, yes, yeah. A 1953 MO Oxford. So that was the first big holiday that we ever had.
Yeah,
and it we went from here up to Napier, round East Cape. Across to Whakatane, to Rotorua, saw the Queen in Rotorua, and then down through the middle.
So was that significant for you, seeing the Queen, or memorable?
Seeing the Queen,
yeah.
Well, it was the second time we'd seen her, because she had been through Palmerston we went away.
And so we
didn't quite chase around the country, but we just happened to coincide.
Mm-hmm.
On the Sunday when we were in Rotorua, the Queen... word got around that the Queen was driving back from church.
Oh, yeah.
And so we found out what the road was that she'd be coming down on, and a lot of people had gathered, and so we watched her as she drove past.
Yeah. Yeah.
But because it wasn't an official drive, she wasn't waving or anything, so things happened pretty quickly.
Yeah, I saw there was one time in Yorkshire, there was one time the Queen was going up and the loader was lining the road. The car shot past so fast. That was
it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. That was 1953-54 Christmas holidays, and then after that, holidays became a regular feature in the May holidays. So 1956, I think, was the first of our May holidays away. We had friends that had taken a cottage at Mount Maunganui, and they recommended it to Mum, and Mum thought this seemed like a good idea, so she managed to talk Dad into going away for a fortnight at the May school holidays, and we were away for the whole 2 weeks, and we did that every year up until about 1963.
Yeah. So what happened with the farm while you were away?
That period of time is fairly quiet.
Yeah.
It's just before lambing starts, everything's been done. The sheep have all been dagged so that they're ready for lambing.
Yeah.
And it's just the end of a sort of a quiet time.
Mm.
All of the maintenance that you do through the autumn had been done.
Yeah. Okay. So did you need someone to watch over the farm, or
in the early days we did have somebody that helped Dad's brother.
Mm.
Dad's brother was not particularly useful on the farm, and so we had another fellow by the name of Vic McEwen. We called him Mac when we were kids, and he was a fellow that worked on the farm as well.
Yeah.
And over that time he would have been there every day.
Mm-hmm. So growing up in a farming community, I suppose two things. One, did you have ideas as to a future career, or you just think stay on the farm? Or?
I can honestly say that I had absolutely no ideas about what I might do at all. To me, staying on farm, living on the farm, was a fun time.
Yeah.
And I thought living on the farm would be like that. I mean, going to school all the time, we very rarely actually saw any work that was done.
Okay.
We did, as I said, we did the docking in the August holidays, we did shearing at Christmas, and apart from that, we never saw the work that was done. So my impression of farming was that the farm looked after itself.
Yeah. Okay.
And there were only these brief periods when you had more intensive work. So I actually grew up knowing very little about farming and also taking very little interest in farming.
Yeah. Would that be normal, do you think?
No, absolutely not. No, no. At school, we did, on Friday afternoons, we used to have, with one of the headmasters, we used to have agriculture.
Hmm.
And that was the Friday afternoon at school. And he would bring out agriculture, the New Zealand Journal of Agriculture, for us to read, and he would talk about farming, and the boys would talk about farming, and I was completely lost.
Okay.
Because I didn't connect with farming in that way at all.
Okay. So the other boys were more actively involved in their family farms?
Yeah, much more so, yeah.
So were your parents bringing you up in a more academic background, or just...
Well, I don't think it was a matter of family policy that I didn't take a great deal of interest in, that I was more interested in academic things.
Yeah.
If you can call things a primary school academic, I did rather well.
Yeah. But learning in literature, was that something that you picked up, say, through your...
Yeah, I had no problems with learning at school at all.
Yeah, were your parents interested in, I know, literature, music, film, reading?
Not so much literature. We had lots of books, though. We did have lots of books, and reading. I read all the time. I'd read in bed in the morning if I wasn't playing with my Meccano, and I'd read in bed at night.
Yeah.
And your reading was something that I enjoyed a lot.
Okay. Now, you mentioned Meccano, and I think that's interesting because for people our generation, Meccano is a great thing for boys to play with. I've actually suddenly got some for my grandsons, and they have no interest whatsoever. Lego's okay, Meccano, why is that? So what was the... Meccano, do you want to describe what Meccano was or what you made with it?
Oh, I'll just go back a little bit for Meccano. So I start off with the semi-technical kind of things that I got. When I was in the very early primers, I was given a clockwork train, which was just a little trial thing. It only had a little oval track and a clockwork engine with two carriages that towed around. And because I was interested in that, then a bigger clockwork train arrived. It could have even been the following Christmas. I can't remember. And then I would buy bits for the train to increase the track that I could run. I bought more carriages and more accessories and stuff like that, so mechanical things appealed to me.
How do you got pocket money and stuff to buy that, or from working on the farm?
No, we didn't. We got Christmas money and birthday money from our grandparents. And so that helped out. We didn't get pocket money that I remember at all, not until much later.
Okay.
And so it would be Christmas money and birthday money that I'd be spending.
Okay, so you expanded your train set, and then...
And then I can remember a Meccano set arrived. I think it was a 3 and a 3A set, which actually made up a number 4 set complete. And the first thing, and of course this was the best thing since sliced bread for me.
Now, okay, so Meccano, you've got strips of metal strips with holes in, and nuts and bolts, and various wheels and pulleys and things
wheels,
that you can put together, so you can build all sorts of things.
And the first thing I tried to build, just from the picture in the book, was a Ferris wheel, which my parents considered to be... I tried and failed miserably because I was trying to build it from the picture in the book. Anyway, the bits were taken away, and overnight, Dad built it. and presented it to me in the morning. And then they told me how to go about reading the instructions line by line by line.
Ah, yes.
And and following the instructions, which told you the procedure to take to get through.
Right, yeah.
Once I'd got that, once I'd understood that, then it was plain sailing.
Right. Yeah. So you tended to do things from instructions? Or?
From that point on, yeah. I did everything from instructions and built not everything that were in the books that came with each of the sets.
Yeah.
But various Christmases would go by and accessory sets would be added to increase the size of the set from a number 4 to a number 5 to a number 6. And ultimately, I saved up enough money to buy the accessory set to get me as far as a number 7.
Okay, so these are the numbers. It's just how many pieces you have. Because now Lego, you buy things to build a pirate ship or a castle or something. And each of them are very specific. But these, it's just more pieces.
They were just more pieces, so you could build more things. Yes, yeah. And the models that you could build were more complex.
Yes.
Bigger.
Yeah.
And more interesting. Mm. And occasionally we constructed our own stuff as well. Out of our imaginations. I can remember doing a couple of vintage cars, and before I got electric motors to drive the bits and pieces, we used to improvise power as well. We had a Hoover floor scrubber, which had two rotating brushes on the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And I discovered that by turning that on its side and running a string from around one of the brushes up to the pulley on it, we could get things to go quite fantastically fast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Oh,
so that was a way of providing power. I did have a clockwork motor, but it just didn't give enough as much oomph as the old Hoover. Then for Christmas one year, I got an absolute windfall of two electric motors and the transformer to power them as well.
Okay.
From various members of the family, they knew what to get me, so that made it so I could power anything I needed.
So you developed an interest in mechanical sort of things and
gears and the operation of gears and things like that, because it was one of those interesting things that you could build gearboxes and stuff like that. And just as an interesting aside to that, years later when I was at the Polytech, and that would have been in about 1978, probably 77, 78, I did a mechanical aptitude test with a class of students.
You were teaching at the
time. I was teaching engineering, and one of the students did miles better than any of the others.
Hmm.
And so I asked the class, how many of you in the class had Meccano when you grew up? And he was the one that put up his hand.
Yeah.
None of the others had Meccano at all.
Okay.
And so it was a good illustration, I think, of how a mechanical device, a mechanical toy,
yes,
can develop a considerable interest. Something you don't get from Lego.
No, absolutely.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.